So our first speaker for tonight is Chris Spring and Ms. Ruth Soledad.
Thanks. I tried to convince my mother some time ago that climate change is the most serious crisis that humanity has faced, and that if we don't stop climate change, and as the great agricultural regions of the world fail, it's going to mean hundreds of millions of refugees, it's going to mean mass starvation, and it's going to mean war. And she said to me, "Chris, if you're right, and the problem is so big and so urgent, surely somebody would be doing something about it." And I think she has a point. And I think answering that question, you know, I mean, it's been known for decades that there's a problem with global warming, yet nothing has been done. Answering that question as to why it is that government and business has done nothing, I think helps understand and or helps to situate what's happening with both clean coal and carbon trading. So I do just want to answer it briefly. And I think there's two interlocking things. The first is that carbon is built into the modern capitalist economy. And the second is that the capitalist economy is based on brutal competition. So taking the first of those points about carbon, the majority of emissions worldwide come from the production of electricity. In Australia, that's about 54%. And according to Martin Ferguson recently, 83% of that electricity production comes from burning coal. About 1% is renewable energy. Coal is also Australia's most valuable export commodity. And it's a similar picture if you look internationally. Out of the 10 biggest companies in the world, 6 are oil companies, 3 are car companies. But it's not just that there's vested interests. It's the competition of the system alongside that which is problematic. So any company which is the first to take serious action that is going to incur costs risk cutting themselves against their competitors, risk going out of business. And at an international level, the problem is even more intractable because you've got all those big companies which have bases in nation states, which look to those nation states to protect their interests. And in fact, that's part of the reason nation states build armies to fight each other and so forth. And the first country to take serious action, because the cost of transition is quite high, to deal with the problem of global warming, faces losing out international competitiveness, faces harm to the economy. And I think that analysis helps you to see why, when both government and business, they'll talk about recognising the problem now, but when they see the scale of what needs to be done, they balk, and instead of doing, they talk and they talk and they talk and they talk. And that's partly what I think clean coal is. It's an attempt by the coal industry to prolong the use of coal for as long as possible. And carbon trading is a few things, but it's firstly coming up with these plans that tie themselves in knots to do something that is really actually quite simple. What needs to be done is that we need to have a massive investment in renewable energy, in the wind farms and solar factories and so forth. I think carbon trading is also giving the appearance of doing something while not actually touching profits and certainly never doing anything that runs counter to the ideology of the market. Ross Garnaut, who's doing the review into climate change now, has come out backing an emissions trading scheme. And he was fairly upfront about why. He said, the creation of a trading scheme is the most efficient means by which to achieve the mitigation as compared to other market instruments. In other words, he was only ever looking at market solutions. And I think, you know, Nicholas Stern, the economist in the UK, who talked about climate change being the greatest market failure, what we're seeing now is an attempt to solve market failure with more market failure. And it's interesting as well to look at some of the submissions from industry to the Garnaut Review and the Emissions Trading Scheme. So you have the Australian Industry Greenhouse Network, which represents key fossil fuel corporations and peak bodies, who asked that the mandatory renewable energy targets be replaced by aspirational targets. Rio Tinto warned of profitless survival and demanded free emissions permits. And the Australian Aluminium Council claimed that free emission permits were essential under any trading scheme because of Australia's need to compete with other regions. In other words, if they weren't given free schemes, either they or somebody else would go on and pollute in other countries if they weren't given the right to pollute here. And I think as well, you've also seen the ALP back off at the slightest hint of anything that's going to damage profits. I had the misfortune recently to hear Senator Kim Carr speak at the AMW State Conference, and I asked him some questions on climate change. And he made it quite clear, I'm paraphrasing here, I didn't write down what he said, that he was going to back the what they call the trade-exposed energy-intensive companies like aluminium and others. It's a mouthful to say. He was going to back them to the hilt, and he was going to protect working-class jobs. Now, that's a lie. Well, at least the second part of that is. The first part's not, that they're going to back them to the hilt. And I should mention as well in passing, when we talk about cost and you talk about transition, what that actually means is jobs. It means that they would have to pay people to build the wind factories, to build the solar factories and so forth. And the real question is whether we've got a big enough labour force to make the transition in time, rather than the question of cost. But I do actually want to go into a little bit of detail about what carbon trading is and clean coal. So carbon trading is essentially the idea that you set a price on the right to pollute, the right to pump carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. There are some companies which will make the changes faster or better or quicker, and they will build up credits that they can sell to other companies that are struggling. Also, as part of most carbon trading regimes, the one in, coming out of Kyoto, is what are called offsets, whereby companies who can't reduce their emissions can buy forestation projects or renewable projects, often in third world countries. And the big problem with offsets, there's a whole lot, so I won't have time to go into it all, but one of them is additionality. So, you know, when you're buying a renewable energy project in China or anywhere else, how do you know that it wouldn't have been done anyway? There was a study recently by some Stanford academics looking at 3,000 offset projects that are worth about $10 billion in carbon credits, and they found that up to two-thirds of them had made no reduction in emissions at all. They also talked about one example from China, I know Mike's going to talk more about this, where all the companies who were building new hydro schemes and gas plants and so forth were all applying for the carbon credits, even though that this is something that the Chinese government's encouraging. Okay, the climate journalist Rob Gelfspan put it that carbon trading could at best deal with the last 10% of fine-tuning of what needs to be done. And even there, I think he's being generous. I think it's also worth having a little look at where carbon trading comes from. Carbon trading was actually pushed into the Kyoto Treaty by the United States, even though they later pulled out. It was based on the sulfur dioxide emissions trading regime in the United States, sulfur dioxide being the cause of acid rain. And in the United States, over a period of about 20 years, it cut sulfur dioxide emissions by about 40%. In Germany, there was a regulatory solution over the same period, or a bit shorter actually, which cut sulfur dioxide by 90%. So in a sense, we're being given an experiment which has already tried and failed. And sulfur dioxide is a small problem with, you know, only thousands of factories. Carbon is built into almost everything that is done. And if you look at, say, the pin-up scheme from Kyoto, the Europeans emissions trading scheme, what happened there was that they gave away free permits. They gave away too many permits, a process called grandfathering. The price of the permits crashed and emissions continue to rise in Europe. And I think it's always worth looking at, you know, whenever there is talk, to see what's happening with emissions. If emissions are not being cut, then the problem is not being solved. And it looks likely as well that Roscano, as the scheme that's coming out of his report and the scheme that the ALP is going back, which still isn't starting until 2010, is likely to repeat many of the same mistakes that the European scheme did. So they're talking about giving free permits to the trade-exposed energy-intensive companies. On top of this, just like Europe, agriculture won't initially be included, airline travel won't initially be included, small business won't initially be included, offsets will be allowed, and, you know, the same sort of things, which it was also racked with fraud and other things. There was no mechanism to enforce these treaties. Okay. because I've only got 12 minutes, I will just move to talk on clean coal just for a little bit. And with clean coal, there are three methods, essentially. The first method, which is going to be used in the new HRL power plant to be built in Victoria, which I hope there's going to be a campaign to oppose, involves removing moisture from brown coal and effectively turning it into black coal. Given that black coal is so problematic anyway, that's not even really theoretically clean coal. The other two methods both involve removing carbon dioxide at different stages of the process from coal and capturing it and storing it in natural underground reservoirs. There's a range of problems with this as well. First of all, it's dangerous. Carbon dioxide in concentration removes oxygen from your body and can kill. There was a natural disaster in Cameroon, a lake where a bubble of carbon dioxide was naturally occurring underground, they thought triggered by a landscape, escaped and killed 1,700 people. So these are part of the risks with clean coal. There's also a problem of distance, that the underground geographical areas have to be relatively near to the existing power stations to make it economic. Clean coal is likely to use more energy and up to between 10 and 40% more, which means you have to burn more coal in order to get clean coal. But I think the biggest problem of all is that is there nowhere in the world where clean coal is currently in existence, in operation, in a commercial project anywhere. So if you look at the coal industry website, they themselves say that the soonest that a clean coal project would be up and running, and I think they're making it up at some level, would be 2017. Scientists say we have a 20-year window at best to start making the changes we need on climate. Greenpeace, which has a great report on its website on clean coal, talks about 2030 is before anything like that would be up and running. And that is, again, a big if. Just this month, there was a $2 billion clean coal project in Western Australia that BHP and Rio Tinto were running, which has failed. And it's been scrapped because they couldn't store the carbon dioxide under the seabed outside of Perth as they intended. And part of the problem with it not being in operation anywhere is what the economists call opportunity cost. That is, all the money that is being thrown at clean coal to prolong the coal industry is money that could be and should be being spent on renewable energy. You know, wind energy works, solar energy works, geothermal energy works. And to get these solutions, I think we're going to need to build a movement to force government to act, to force business to act, a movement like some of the best movements we've seen in human history. I think hopefully Climate Camp can be the start of such a movement that points the finger at the real climate criminals and that starts to move towards what we need, which is the investment in renewable energy. And I think I'll leave it there. Thanks.
We'll take questions and stuff at the end. So we'll go on to the next speaker.